crazy is when bastards just sit and play on their phones when everybody else is... You're not even listening, are you?
I can hear everything you're saying. You just made me miss my shot, you bastard.
Look at the, look at the stupid look on your face.
You're playing your game while we're trying to get our game.
So...
Wasn't even look,
have you even drunk any of that whiskey yet? Are you just staring at it and sniffing it?
It didn't even look like a real game.
It's a Facebook game.
It looked like something I played when I was about four.
Well, you know.
You should play Balls and Holes. That's my favourite.
I've played that many times.
Just today.
So I want to know, the video collection update, what the fuck?
Collection update? Well, yeah, it's a little bit later than usual. We're in March now and I've still got the February one to go. And when it comes, it will be not particularly spectacular. I think it's about 8 or 9 titles, but I will go in great lengths to talk about every one of those.
It'll be a nice 5-minute piece.
Yeah, it's coming this week. Just got to sit down and
write something for them. Good.
No, it's all off the cuff.
All off the cuff.
All off the cuff.
Cool. So what do you reckon of that for an intro?
Yeah.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Hey, you've got 3 seconds for it.
I'm gonna amp this baby up, see how it sounds.
Okay, fine. Let's do it. Let's find out how the fuck rehearsals are going in fucking Arabia. Come on, gang. Come on.
This is the FakeChamp.net podcast. My name's Glenn.
I'm Jared.
This is Sean.
And let's get going. We've got a... I'd say this is a kind of a light show. We've just got a few things to get through. We've got a focus film. We've got a forgotten gem. And we'll just stretch that shit out.
I got a couple of pieces of news.
Well, yeah.
Why don't you tell us?
Everybody's seen the Ben-Hur remake trailer?
That anyone that's following FakeChamp's
well,
Facebook
seen it many times.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I know how it made me feel. How did it make you guys feel?
I don't have a massive attachment to the spectacular Ben-Hur, but it feels like a film that probably has been done and you just shouldn't do it again.
No.
It's been done, and it's been done...
There is no other movie in history that has a following or a catchphrase like bigger than Ben-Hur.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's part of the culture.
It's part of the vernacular. And it's this remake... It's directed by Timur... I can never pronounce his last name.
Daywatch guy.
Yeah, the Daywatch guy. And even Wanted. He did Wanted, which I quite liked.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
That's right. You know, the guy makes big budget, fun, nonsense genre mashups.
Visually spectacular.
Oh, there's
although
no...
Although heavily reliant on
though,
CGI.
I don't reckon that is visually spectacular. It looks like a cartoon.
Which one?
Ben-Hur.
Yeah, it looks nonsense, doesn't it?
The opening couple, you know, the opening seconds where he's pulled from the boat, I'm kind of like, that looks cool, and that will look cool in 3D. Ben-Hur isn't a film that should be viewed in 3D.
Ben-Hur isn't a film that should be fucking, like, oh my god, don't even get me started. Ben-Hur, there's a handful of them, there's a small handful of them that are just, they're just...
Sacred.
Sacred. Don't touch them. Mm. Don't fuck with them. Don't think about it. Casablanca's another one. They remake Casablanca, I swear to God, boys, I will top myself.
So you didn't go for the TV series Casablanca?
I did not go for the TV series Casablanca.
Play the game, Sam?
The second they cast Bruce Willis playing Sam, playing Humphrey Bogart, I swear to God, I'll blow my brains out. That's it. Game over.
Mm.
And Ben-Hur is another one. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. I don't care how much money you throw at it. Don't touch it.
So are you going to blow your brains out?
I'm going to blow my fucking brains out.
Today's my... August, upon the theatrical release.
Yeah, today's
all the protests.
There is a part of me that's kind of excited because, you know, Timur does make such visually arresting films, but at the same time, it doesn't matter.
It looks like a paycheck film.
It just, exactly right. It just looks like they're cashing
in. And for a film that should be, given that it's a remake of the biggest film... It should be something spectacular. It shouldn't be the trailer just drops one day in March and it comes out in August. It's like, there's been no teasing or anything in regards to this movie.
It's a strange thing. And even, I mean, there's parts of it that I understand. You know, the cast are largely unknowns. I get it. That makes sense. But it makes me so angry.
I don't take well to Roman Gladiator style films anyway. Like, I don't like Gladiator. I don't like those sort of sword and sandal things.
How come?
I don't know. It just doesn't float my boat. I watch them and I'll enjoy a good one, but this one really
What's your top sword and sandal?
Oh, fuck. I don't know. I don't like them that much. So, I mean, Sword and the Sorcerer, obviously, but yeah, that's a bit different.
Yeah. That would be more into fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't really like them, man. So. Yeah. So Spartacus, maybe.
Spartacus, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Again, another film that, you know, outside of obviously being adapted for a TV series is something that shouldn't be touched.
Telly movie, they did a telly
movie. They did a telly, yeah, miniseries, yeah. That was what the French call garbage. Yeah. That's the first piece of news. Second piece of news is...
Hang on, can we just take a guess? Because at the moment, obviously, the film doesn't come out till August, so there's nothing out there to say how long this film's going to go for, but I have a feeling it's going to go for 2 hours or less.
I reckon.
Which doesn't feel like a spectacle or a major event movie, does it?
No, I reckon 2.5.
I reckon they're going to push it out that far?
Yeah. I reckon 2.5.
I guess if you can get a Fast and Furious 7 movie, you know, over the 120-minute mark, this could probably go for 150 minutes.
I think it's going to go, I agree with Glenn, it's probably going to go for 2.5 hours, and if it doesn't, it's not even going to make 90 minutes. They'll top it at like 95 minutes. Like Legend of Hercules, that was another one. You know, that Millennium Films produced Rennie Harlan. That was stupid as well, but that was barely 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Was that the one with The Rock?
No.
Yeah. No, the one, they were two at the same time.
Yeah. Right, okay.
The Rock was just Hercules.
Right, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I still haven't watched that either. Yeah.
No, none of that.
Has anyone? None of us have watched that?
Yeah, it's no. Not.
That'll be a future
not
focus
good.
Film.
No, I've watched it. It's not good.
Oh, you did? You saw it?
Yeah,
it didn't like okay.
No, well, bang was that idea.
Right. And that was in 3D.
That was in 3D. Look, I'm going to go see it just because, you know, I need a proper excuse as to why I'm going to neck myself.
And I need to see it in 3D just because I'm just kidding.
If I get a free ticket, I'll see it. If I don't get a free ticket, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, probably. That's it for second one is between now and the next podcast. I'm pretty sure Batman versus Superman is going to drop.
Yeah, I've seen that on Tuesday.
Opens what do we March think? 24th.
What do we think? Are we excited?
Not
are we
excited
not?
At all.
I don't know anyone really? That's excited about this film, to be honest. Why, Sean? Are you excited about this film?
I am so excited. I can't.
Really?
Even,
are you serious? Wow. No, honestly, this is the first guy.
I can't even begin to tell you. I was like one of the six people that really dug the last Superman film.
Man of Steel, right.
Like, I really enjoyed Man of Steel. Mm. And I know it has its faults, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Most films do.
But that film's mostly faults.
I don't think so. Yeah. I genuinely don't think so.
A disaster film, maybe?
No, I mean, like, no.
Disaster of a film.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Settled on.
Needed more Kevin Costner for my money.
I love Kevin Costner. Mm. Yeah, I'm petitioning to Netflix to see if we can get an entire Kevin Costner channel. I'm really excited. Right, but cool. There doesn't seem to be as much hype surrounding it as I would have probably
anticipated. I think the fanfare's fizzled. I think the underwhelming promotion of it.
It's weird,
confusing.
Isn't it?
Every trailer has been different, and it seems to represent a different kind of film.
All the poster art. It's not being consistent in the build. Yeah. Everything's different. We saw a poster with Wonder Woman on it, with the big Wonder Woman logo on it. It's confusing. You look at it and you go, hang on. There's a Wonder Woman movie coming out, and then you move closer, and in small print down the bottom, it's Batman versus Superman.
And the Wonder Woman logo looks like a bloody wrestling logo.
It does, doesn't it?
It's ridiculous. It looks like this is one of those new bloody...
Or the Van Halen logo.
Oh, that too. And look, I'm seeing it on Tuesday. I'm not excited about it, but I'll give it a fair critique.
And I think that's the thing. Everyone's going to watch it, but seemingly no one's really that excited about it. So it's a good thing if it ends up being... Okay.
Well, you know what? The fact that it's a sequel to Man of Steel. I think Man of Steel let so many people down. The only reason to get excited about this one is the fact that we've got Batman.
Right. Yeah.
Again. Yeah. Which that series was solid as fuck, you know.
Absolutely.
So maybe that will give it some kind of validity.
The other thing I found interesting too was the pieces that were coming out to the media, like the press they were doing. Zack Snyder's press was, we really wanted Christian Bale to come back to do the movie, but he wouldn't, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but we're not talking about how good, you know,
it used to be
Ben Affleck is in this movie. We're talking about that. Then I also saw the chap, what's it, Henry Cavill, that plays Superman. He's come out and said, I don't really do these movies for the art. I do it for the money. And that's been the headline in most of his interviews. And you're like, hey, what the fuck? I know we're not doing it for the art, but why don't we sell the movie and not just...
Well, they're all doing it for the money. None of them are doing it for the art.
Yeah, no, there's no question that, you know, come on.
Oh, man.
It's just weird press. You're like,
I mean, that's got a really weird... The Wonder Woman aspect is really bizarre. Well, let's talk about the bloody Spider-Man in New Captain America.
That was just
a real odd reveal.
Yeah, it was a bit. I know there's a lot of people that are kind of not digging on the fact it looks like a very traditional Spider-Man. I like that. I was more so disappointed it looked very CGI. For a trailer that looked really good, that seemed so thrown in there at the last minute.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
CGI Spider-Man there for a second.
I wonder if this is going to be the birth of a new wave of superhero. I mean, like,
oh, for God's sake.
I know, like, but it's like these sort of genre mashups. How long is it going to be before DC mashes with Marvel and, you know,
we're doing Royal Rumble style fucking movies now?
Because even
I don't know, will they? Because I mean, Marvel seems to be making the money, and it's the DC stuff that isn't hitting. DC seems to be doing better with its TV show, but not with its movies.
Because even the news that 23 Jump Street has been announced, the 23 Jump Street is going to be a mashup with Men in Black.
So weird. Like, but I want to see it.
Yeah,
it defies logic.
It is so mental, it could just work.
Now, is this like, where is the origin of this? Was there any kind of comic book crossover with those two?
Surely not.
They must have been high when they were coming up at this.
I absolutely think so.
Corporate meeting, what are we going to do? What's really out there? Outrageous.
That's it. This franchise is on the rise, the Jump Street franchise. Men in Black 3 didn't do so well. Granted, might have been the best film.
Yeah.
But we'll just get one to help the other out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, that makes sense. We'll do that.
I don't know.
It's like having a Rambo Golden Girls crossover.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
I would, to be fair, that's something I would fucking watch. Yeah.
Same.
Watch
Sylvester get behind Stallone. That. Yeah. Is there many of the Golden Girls left, though?
One.
One, okay. Yeah, yeah. Which one's that?
It's Betty White.
Betty White, of course. Yeah. You'll never die.
No. Incredible. You've jinxed it, man.
I'm sorry, tomorrow, Betty White. No. Yes. It's happened before.
Oh, the other one is, of course, Indiana Jones 5.
That's the one.
That's the one that excites me the most. Mm.
It excites me.
And it's exciting that now Disney obviously will be in control of the property. And given The Force Awakens, this gives me a lot of hope.
Oh, look, I tell you what.
It won't just be a cash-in, it'll be, you know.
Anyone that follows Fake Chip knows that I have particularly been one of the few people in the world that absolutely loves Crystal Skull. I think it's a bloody great film, and there's an article I've written that you can read that defends it and gives you rationale as to why, but I have no hesitation with number 5.
Sorry, Jarrett's
microphone. Jarrett's got a limp mic. Yeah.
I'm just trying to make it look like a mic right now.
I'm the same. I felt like until I joined this squad, I was one of the 4 or 5 people in the world that didn't think Crystal Skull was that bad.
Yet really? Critically well received.
Yeah,
critics
it was weird.
Loved it.
I remember critics loved it, and everybody always came up with the same. I'm not going to rehash it. You want to hear the excuses? Go read the article and the arguments that followed. I genuinely don't know where the love for this film has gone. It's not a bad film.
Well, I don't think the love existed amongst the fans at all.
No,
I don't understand why. Like Leonard Maltin and Roger Ebert giving it 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, you know, Empire Australia gave it 4 out of 5.
And,
like, it was,
and they used the same reasons I did for loving it, in that it's not far removed from the other ones whatsoever.
No.
Like, it's just as absurd. It's just that there's been so much time between them that our expectations have changed.
Yeah.
That we were kids when we loved those movies, and now as adults we have a whole different level of expectation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but if you watch them back to back, it's not far removed whatsoever. No,
and they follow. I mean, like, I've done that. I've watched all 4 of them in a line, and it fits perfectly well. People act like it was like Steven Spielberg, and then, like, you know, Wim Wenders showed up and fucking directed an episode. Like, and it's just not. It obviously follows in line.
And then when people say, oh, it's so stupid we've got aliens or interdimensional beings and all that, well, it's no more absurd than any of the other shit that's happened in any of the other films. Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. The first film that started the franchise had them chasing a box full of fucking ghosts.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, and then the other excuse is obviously, you know, CGI. Oh, it's too much CGI. Oh, please.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a very practically heavy film. There's a lot of miniatures. There's a lot of practical effects and stunts.
Old school matte paintings.
You know,
and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, and yes, there's a lot of digital. Probably a little bit too much for its, you know, for its own good. But nothing that detracts from it.
I totally agree.
At all.
But
it's mainly just Shia LaBeouf, though, really.
Yeah, it's Shia
LaBeouf. I don't even have a problem with him. Everyone brings up the monkey scene because it's a fucking easy target.
It is.
Yeah, everyone agrees
that's
dumb.
And deservedly so. Yeah. And everybody, even the defenders, you know, will put their hand up and say, you know, fair call, stupid scene.
But the defending that one, though, if you were going to try, Spielberg himself knows that was a bad idea.
Mm.
He said, we thought about that on the day and we made it happen because it sounded like a good idea.
Yeah, right.
And that would sound like a good idea in discussion, but anyway.
Anyway, we get off point. Indiana Jones 5.
Mm.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Bring it.
And they've actually slated a date for it, is that
right?
It's like August
2017.
David Kep just got hired yesterday.
Oh, great.
Yes. Excellent.
Wasn't he behind the last one?
Behind the screenplay for it.
Amongst many that came before him to you
know, yeah, everybody had a pass at it,
nut
didn't
it out. Yeah. But no, I'm excited, and people that say that, you know, Indiana Jones is too old, well, who gives a fuck how old he is, because the time frame works.
Mm. Yeah.
The Chronicles of Young Indiana Jones presented him as a 90-year-old, so we know that he's been an adventurer right up until his fucking geriatric
age. No, that's exciting news. Probably the best news of the week, I think.
Well, the only other thing I want... Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, no other news.
The only other thing I wanted to just quickly bring up without discussing at great length before we move on is Spotlight won the fucking Oscar.
Yeah.
Seriously, did anybody expect that?
No.
It went the whole night, not really winning any awards or picking up any accolades, and then boom, best film.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that, because it was such an outsider, I wish I'd have put $10 on it. Mm. I'd be a fucking...
Did it win just because it's topical?
It might have.
It wasn't the best film.
No. Surely not. No, God. I think we even debated whether it was worthy of a nomination.
Worthy of a list. Yeah.
An award.
So that was a real
It was a
doozy.
Shock. A shock. When someone said it to me, I went, no.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because was I actually... Was I dreaming?
Yeah.
Like,
you still
alive? But it is nice that Mad Max walked away with the most awards. That's pretty awesome. Mm.
Yeah. So. Weird fake Shambar stoked with that.
Yeah. Well, two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, two out of three. Still, that's a win, Glenn.
Hail Mary, Alo, I walk. We go to Ken Loney in the Sunshine Chopper.
It's always brighter above the clouds, Grant.
Hey, you gonna stay in that bird up there during the storm?
Yes, sir. I'll be up here, Grant, watching all the routes in and around our region.
What can you see there, Ken?
Oh, God!
Who are
those? There's a bunch of them. They're people. But they're crazy. They're fighting them. People are getting killed out there. Oh!
Ken, do you see any police? Is anybody trying to restore order down there?
I don't know what the hell has just happened.
Well, we're going to have to see if we can... Ken, are you there, Ken?
Alright, so let's talk about a focus film. Jarrett, you bought this one.
I did, sir. Pontypool.
Tell us why Pontypool.
Well, I was thinking since 10 Cloverfield Lane opened recently and it was a film where...
Contained. Yes,
pretty much 3/4 of the film is all contained in one environment whilst everything's happening on the outside world and you're not a privy to what's actually going on out there, and to a degree you don't see it. Likewise with this film, although they're reporting what's happening in the outside world and they've got people reporting back to them what's happening out there, and I kind of thought this whole micro sort of cosmos kind of, you know, situation I like, and I thought,
yeah,
let's do Pontypool.
I see the
turned out you guys didn't actually see this.
Well, this is interesting because the director is Bruce McDonald, who is one of my favourite directors, Canadian directors, and this is one of the two films I haven't seen of his. The two films I haven't seen are the horror films.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one being Hellion. And just to give you an idea of who Bruce McDonald is, he is the guy behind Hardcore Logo, which was the third in a trilogy with Roadkill, Highway 61. He also made Trigger, The Tracy Fragments with Alan Page.
Alan Page, yeah.
Amazing film. My Babysitter's a Vampire.
Oh, this was a TV movie or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like a made-for-cable movie or something.
But it got such a good response that they did release it theatrically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. I like it. It's a good film.
I haven't seen it. I know about it.
He's a great director, and I hadn't seen this. I fucking loved it.
Yeah, very cool film.
It was really clever. I've never seen any of his films before, which is weird given how famous he is, obviously, in Canada, as I've since discovered, and you know, you, Glenn, being such a massive fan. Never seen any one of his films. Not one.
Well, you at the very least see Hardcore Logo. It's incredible.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a mockumentary all about the punk music scene.
Right on.
Yeah, it's so good.
Made a sequel, didn't they?
Yeah, which the first time I saw it, I kind of liked it, and then I watched it again recently, and it's terrible.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't. But that was made for television as well. Like, he was paid to follow it up for CBC or whatever.
Cash gigs.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But he puts himself in that film. Like, he follows himself as the director.
Gonzo.
Yeah, it's weird. But Pontypool, let's focus on Pontypool.
Yeah, yeah, right.
This is a weird, fucked up movie. It is, it is an original, unique, and really troubling kind of film. Like, I really felt the dread of this film. It gets under your skin. It's just constantly and imposing suspense, on you.
Likened to 10 Cloverfield Lane, of not knowing what's actually going on.
Yeah.
You're constantly in suspense and you're only being fed as much as you need at that point in time. You're just craving to know more.
You know what? Whilst you don't know what's going on, when you actually do see what's going on, you still don't know what the fuck it is.
Yeah,
and
it's
just
absolutely
completely terrifying.
Yeah. I love that. I love when you have a film that doesn't need an explanation for the genesis or, you know, it doesn't need to be tightly, you know, wrapped up at the end. You just you're thrust into the middle of it and you've just got to work out what's going on as it goes on.
So back up.
I was going to say, let's back up. Let's give a synopsis so people know where.
Yeah, do tell, Sean. how best would you describe this film?
Small town Pontypool radio station run by Mackie?
What was his name? Some cowboy. He's a hot shot.
Grant Mazzy.
Grant Mazzy. Yeah.
Mazzy? Miss Mazzy? Mazzy's missing?
Mizzy's. I'm not missing Mazzy.
He's simple.
He's new to Pontypool.
He started working in this radio show, which is recorded in the basement of a church. And as the morning progresses, little bits of information start bleeding in about an event, an unknown, uncategorized event that happens on the outside. And as these characters try to discover exactly what the scenario is, the more they realize how much danger they are potentially in. And as a result, as the world starts closing in around this small church recording studio, the dread just increases and increases as we realize what exactly going on.
Well done.
Thanks, man.
It's a really great description.
You didn't give away any spoilers.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
And what a performance piece, too.
Oh, my God. Mm. McCatty is the guy that plays Mazza. Is just, outside of having a voice like silk, this guy has a voice that is made for radio. He is just a hell of an actor.
Yeah.
He kind of comes across like your man, J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, where he just comes out of nowhere, takes this leading role. Granted, Pontypool was in 2008. He takes this leading role and he just acts the shit out of it.
He sure does.
He is so good in it, to the point where you're just like, how come more people haven't seen this film? I'm a cinephile. I've never seen it. And why doesn't this guy work in leading roles more?
Well, without such a really strong performance like that, the movie would be so absurd, it's stupid.
Absolutely.
And he sells it.
Needs a strong anchor.
There's so many nice close-up shots of reaction. And he doesn't even have to say a word and he speaks a million.
Absolutely.
What about yourself?
Anything in particular?
Just talk about the movie in some way.
Just the intensity of it. The fact that, you know, it feels like, you know, you're hanging on every word.
Yeah.
You know, literally.
And it kind of throws back to Oliver Stone's film, Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Well, as I was watching that, because I watched Talk Radio not too long ago, and I was thinking the same thing, is that Talk Radio had a very specific agenda. You know, it was talking about, you know, psychosis, and it was talking about the insanity of it. And as Pontypool was progressing, I couldn't quite work out, is this actually about anything?
Yeah.
Is it just people talking? Is this just an exercise in director's craftsmanship? Like, look how well I can direct three people in a basement for 90 minutes and keep you watching. But as the film evolves, as we start to understand exactly what it is that's going on, I think the message becomes clearer and clearer.
Yeah.
I could be speaking for myself, but without ruining anything, I think it's about the danger of small talk and gossip in small towns and the danger of rhetoric.
There's definitely an analogy in there for anyone that wants to look for it.
Yeah,
can find.
And it's not there at the beginning, but it is there at the end. And it was really cleverly drip-fed.
The interesting thing, and this is not a spoiler in any way, that the inspiration for the film came from the Orson Welles War of the Worlds,
radio
broadcast, which fooled the world into thinking there was a mass invasion and whatnot. And then you have the director, McDonald, saying to the public, you know, these are not zombies. This is much more, you know, serious and legitimate. So you've got two conflicting things. You've got one thing that leads you to believe this could be all hoax and what we're watching is going to be revealed. Yep. Then you've got the other aspect of the director saying that's actually real. So you don't know. You're watching the film and you have no fucking idea. Is this real? Is it not? And it just constantly right through.
Yeah, because you're kind of waiting for it to break.
Yeah.
You're like, hang on. Oh no, no, it is still going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the moment of clarity? And did he suddenly break out of it? Is something going on?
Even are the characters are constantly like, I think we're being led on. I think they're absolutely. Having a go, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really weird fucked up movie.
I think those little moments of realism help to anchor the film as well. So that when the strange stuff starts happening, when the uncanny starts to occur, it becomes really unsettling.
Yeah.
You know, because we're with these guys, these three people in this radio station the whole time. And then when the crazy comes, it's really macabre.
Yeah.
And it's not overplayed. Mm. I mean, like, ultimately this is a shade away from a zombie invasion film that we never get to see the zombie invasion. It never really occurs. And probably the most unsettling moment is just with people in a silent room beating on glass.
Power of suggestion.
Yeah,
man.
And it is, and it's really well calibrated, it's really well handled, but it wouldn't work if it wasn't for those moments of realism that we're talking about to bring us into a place that we understand that confusion and that angst and that anxiety. It's great.
The whole thing was made for $1.5 million.
That's surprising.
Incredibly well shot.
That's amazing.
Sound design's fantastic. Yeah. Like it is a tight package of a movie.
And the film's based on a trilogy of books. So there's two other stories, which I believe, as according to IMDb, there is another one that has either just come out or it's in production right now.
Right,
so it'd be interesting to see where this story goes.
Yeah, it's been a number of years, obviously about 8 years since this came out.
And whether they will tie it in with this film or just release it as a standalone story. Yeah.
They could go the Cloverfield Lane way. Do you know, like Cloverfield Lane is a great exercise in franchising an idea.
Yeah.
You know, because the first one is handheld video camera, it's big and it's brash, you see monsters stomping through Fifth Avenue, where the second one is all shot in one room. Like, so they, by giving themselves these limitations, it makes it a more exciting franchise
and not directly linking the story
same world but not directly linking
absolutely.
And to see the sequel to Pontypool perhaps do the inverse of Cloverfield, start small and go big, could be an idea.
Maybe.
Or
I guess you could read the book and find out.
Well, that's
well,
true.
Well, there's that. I was going to mention, obviously this came out in 2008, it was about a year later there's a film that came out with Bill Moseley called Dead Air, which had a very similar sort of premise but lacked any of the suspense.
Tension.
And I mean, Bill is good in genre films, but when it's really dependent on him being a radio announcer, and thing is, it actually moves out of the station toward the end, so you do see more, and it feels just cheap.
Too much.
It's a real cheap version of this film. But then the same year this came out, The Signal came out, which had a similar premise that there was something that was, you know, that you couldn't quite label what it was. Was it this sort of audible virus or what it was that drove people into such sort of strange, you know, rage-like sort of manner? And that was an incredible film too.
The signal
completely was underrated and
really,
largely ignored.
Really clever.
Very clever.
Made for like 50 grand or something.
Yeah, like three or four filmmakers, you know, that all shot the different pieces that all connect. It's not an anthology as such, it's just what's happening around in the one building and
amazing.
How not.
Well, if you've never heard of Bruce McDonald, look up his films. Definitely check out his Road Trilogy. The Tracy Fragments is possibly one of the most impressively edited films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Every single moment of the film is at least 20 frames on the screen.
Right.
And at times there's 100 frames. But each frame has a different part of the story taking place. And you kind of got to use the scope of your vision.
Is this like Time Code? Like that
kind
one that
of,
came out where there was...
But much more complex.
Okay.
And at first you're like, there's no way I can fucking catch up with this because something over there is happening 10 minutes away from what that, you know. But then at the end it all comes together and you realize that your mind has processed it automatically.
Wow, okay, that's quite clever.
It's amazing, but to edit that, I can't imagine.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine doing 100 frames on the screen at once. Anyway, Ellen Page is in that. It's a great film. Check it out. And Pontypool, dude, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
Fuck you, Rick.
I'm just going to talk about this for the rest of the day.
All right, then.
Pod's nice.
Oh.
Mate. It's just, it sounds so fucking bad.
So, Jared, what are we up to?
Forgotten Gems.
It's better than Rapid Fire.
Oh, Forgotten Gems. You know what the funny thing is? That earlier this evening, Jared and I purchased potato gems.
We did.
Potato gems.
Potato gems.
So, Forgotten Gems is... It fucks with my mind because it's so hard to distinguish.
We need to get rid of this one. I feel like it's really hard because...
Is it an obscurity or a forgotten gem?
Like, and it's... Yeah, and it's my... I've forgotten about it. I haven't thought about it for a few years. And you're like, no, fuck, everyone's talking about that movie. Like, really?
Yeah.
Where are they talking about this movie?
But
it's a tough one.
It's that distinguish between... what's an obscurity and what's a forgotten gem. Yeah. And the way I look at it is, it at the time it was a big release.
It had to have been a film. Yes.
Went and faded away. You can't get it, or you know.
Like there was a marketing behind it. Yeah. Maybe not enough people saw it, and then it just went away.
And there was for mine, because I remember the theatrical release like it was yesterday. So.
Excellent. So it had a theatrical.
It did. Ooh.
Well, tell us what it is. Glenn.
Tell us what it is.
Tell us what it is, Glenn.
See that? Okay. Well played. High five. Yeah.
Boom. So, do you want me to drip some information?
Yeah. Yeah. Please. All right. I totally want to guess this.
Okay. 1991. There's 100 points in that.
1991.
Okay. No, do you know it?
No.
It was the year that Pee Wee Herman was caught. No.
Yeah.
Directed by Peter Yates, who is the guy behind Suspect. Huh?
Bullet?
No.
Peter Yates directed Bullet.
Yeah, but not 1991.
No. But he's the guy behind.
Yeah. Deep the Deep. He did Eyewitness. Yeah. He did Krull.
Hang on. Stop naming them all, because we. Just give us some more hints towards this one.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
but I'm not hinting.
I know. Okay. But he might say one of those.
1991, goddammit.
Yeah, I know.
This will give it away.
It's the year that
Pee Wee Murray Abraham.
And Nostradamus.
No, Amadeus was in the 80s, dude. And that was...
And they're not Peter Yates.
No.
No, that was... What's his name?
Milos Forman. No, you're right.
Not Milos.
Milos.
Forman. Okay, keep guessing, man.
Okay, hang on. Give us another hint.
I did F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, I know. That was...
The next thing's a giveaway.
Okay.
Tom Selleck.
Quigley Down Under.
That was Simon Winsor.
That was about 91.
That was about 91. F. Murray Abraham. Tom
Selleck. Her Alibi?
No. Okay. Structure of the story is very similar to Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, I presumed innocent.
No, that's Harrison Ford.
That's Harrison Ford.
Oh, no, an innocent man?
Yes! Oh my god!
I knew it. Well, it seems close.
Okay, well played. My forgotten gem is an innocent man.
Right,
with
yes.
With Tom Selleck and F. Murray Abraham.
Never saw it.
Neither did I.
Well, you'll never guess it, what, though. But it's the story of an innocent man.
Right.
He's sent to prison.
Does it have the Billy Joel song in it? They couldn't license it.
He's sent to prison when he's framed by two cops. They bust his house looking for drugs, realize they've got the wrong house. When he comes out of the shower with a hairdryer in his hand, they shoot him.
Oh.
But
they think it's a gun.
They think it's a gun. So they plant a gun on him, they plant drugs, and send him to prison.
Yes.
Oh, meanwhile, no, I did see this. Meanwhile, in prison, he befriends another inmate, which is F. Murray Abraham.
Right.
He plots his revenge. He's only in for 6 years, so when he gets out, it's hell to pay. So
it's double indemnity time.
Boom!
I have seen this movie. Now.
It is just an awesome movie, and at the time it was all over the cinema. Like Dead Bang was around that time.
John
Frankenheimer.
Yeah, but it's a really strong drama. It's a bit heavy-handed.
Yeah,
but
this was like one of the Disney subsidiary studios, like Touchstone or someone like that made this movie.
Could've been,
back when they made these type of movies.
Well, that's it.
Bring back those days.
Yeah, I remember this. This was theatrical, and it was Tom Selleck was still popular. The year before he'd done that Her Alibi movie, the comedy. And then I think he did Quigley Down Under shortly after this, and then he just kind of faded away.
Do you know he looks like my dad?
What happened to him?
He looks like my dad.
Does he?
Oh, yeah,
my dad
awesome.
My dad looks like Tom Selleck.
That's cool. He's got the mustache.
Yeah.
One of the best things you can do on the internet is look up Tom Selleck sandwich waterfall. Tom Selleck sandwich waterfall.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Right. Okay.
It's amazing.
Leave it at that. I'll just go rip myself.
So, look, it's got a good script.
Who wrote it?
It's got a... good question. I don't know who wrote it. I didn't really pay that much attention, but... There's a heavy focus on the drama over the action, which sort of gives it a lot of validity, and the pacing's great, and it's just one you can't come across anymore. I mean, it's on eBay for like $10, but no one's there buying it.
It's like a Mill Creek release or something, one of those cheaper labels in the US that have sub-licensed stuff. Yeah.
And I've got the DVD, and I think from memory, I watched it probably a year ago. I think it's PanScan, which is disappointing, but fuck, it needs a re-release. I guess no one remembers it, so there you go.
Peter Yates has got, just on the topic, Peter Yates has got a couple of those kind of forgotten gems. He did a film back in the late 80s called The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which ended up with a Criterion release, starred Robert Mitchum. And if you haven't seen this film, it's just one of the best 70s hard men films that nobody's ever seen. I've got a copy, I'll lend it to you. It's sensational.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Right, Jared.
Okay, so my my film, do you want me to lead in a few hits?
Drip feed it, yeah.
Okay, so mine's from 1998, and...
Chairman of the Board.
6 days.
No, that was 98. That would have been early years before. Was that the one with Carrot Top in it?
Yeah. Look at your face.
Okay, so 98, it had a prominent TV star.
Meet the Deedles.
She was in a popular teen TV series at the time.
Buffy. Oh, Disturbing Behavior.
Yes, you're correct. Disturbing Behavior.
Really?
Yes.
Zinger.
Eddie Holmes. He got it. He got it.
Oh, that had James Marsden in it as well.
I loved it. It did. That was, he only just came up earlier.
That was filmed right where I lived in Vancouver.
Really?
It's filmed on a tiny island community called Bowen Island, which is just like less than a kilometre off the mainland, and you have to get a ferry to it. And yeah, it's a really cool little community.
Very cool. Well, what led me to want to watch this movie is last night I watched Dead Kids, which is also known as Strange Behavior, which, you know,
very similar.
Disturbing Behavior did obviously borrow a little bit from it. I like Disturbing Behavior much better. Like, I think Strange Behavior is a better looking film.
Yeah.
But Disturbing Behavior is a hell of a lot more fun. Yeah. It has got Katie Holmes in it. So come on.
And it kind of came around the same time as The Faculty.
It did. I was going to say, it was the deluge of teen horror films all post-Scream in 96. That year we had Faculty.
But
they were
more like pod people type of films rather than slashers. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because the Faculty was the exact same year and is arguably the better film. You know, Rodriguez. But this is the one I can go back and rewatch. It helps that it's 84 minutes.
Which I might mention,
actually, when the director finished cutting the movie, it did run 115 minutes. Did go through so much test screenings and recuts that they eventually got it down to 84 minutes. There's about 11 deleted scenes on the DVD.
Yep.
So you can kind of patch together what they cut out. And they cut out so much. There's so many subplots. Yep. But it works as an 84-minute movie. Just a brief synopsis of it. It's a family moves to a small town. The small town they move to have a counselor at the school who has an agenda to sort of retrain teens to become perfect students and perfect citizens as such, and that's through some sort of brain manipulation. You never really see the whole process, but you see a lot of the failings. And the ones that are the successes, there's a slight catch in that when they're sexually aroused, they pretty much go bonkers, and bonkers, I mean, like, they will beat, rape, kill, do whatever.
Yeah.
And it makes for a solid 84 minutes of viewing. It's directed by David Nutter. Now, interestingly enough, David
was
Nutter.
Was it really?
Yes.
David Nutter is like one of the main men in TV. Just
absolutely.
Now.
He's like, won two Emmys for different episodes of TV shows.
Yeah, and he becomes like this, the show template runner, where he'll be brought in to direct the pilot, and it's his vision that the rest shapes the series.
Yeah.
Not only that, David Nutter was the guy behind Trancers
4 and 5. Which is also, and there his only other screen credits bar the first feature he directed in 85 is working for Charlie Band and doing those two films. This is the only other feature, and this was the last feature film he did, and obviously because he had so much difficulty with the studio, he just went back to doing TV.
Didn't he have a fair bit of
X-Files? Has won two Emmys since then.
Yeah, he was one of the dogs.
Back when Disturbing Behavior came out, he was doing X-Files.
I think he had more, he had a little bit to do with X-Files, but I think he had more to do with the spin-off Millennium.
Yeah.
Now, funnily enough too, Mark Snow does the score for Disturbing Behavior, who was...
Because I do recall, because it was made while I was living there, and I remember everyone was talking about
it. That's so fucking cool, dude. You were there when that was... This movie was happening.
I remember the trailer. I remember the trailer. Disturbing Behavior because I had that song
Harvey Danger. Flagpole Sitter.
I remember it being really fun, and then I never watched the film.
And you've never seen it?
I've never seen it.
Oh, I can't wait for you to
and
see
Jared, it. Jared, I tell you, Disturbing Behavior is the first film that came to mind when I finished watching It Follows.
Right, okay.
I know it's not the same film, but it has that kind of same ambience to it. Very subtle.
And I was going to mention, we mentioned James Marsden's in it, Katie Holmes is in it. Nick Stahl's in it before he went off the rails, batshit, walking down, you know, Hollywood Boulevard in his underwear, jerking off in public, drug-addled, crazy. But he plays a crazy character in this. He gets reformed, though, and becomes a proper, you know, member of society. William Sadler's in it, and he is fucking fantastic in a ridiculously over-the-top role that kind of could have been played by... Oh, now, who am I thinking of? How do I convey who I'm thinking of? He's in White Sands. He's in Body of Evidence. He's in every fucking movie.
Willem Dafoe.
It feels like he's playing Willem Dafoe playing this character, but it's great. Bruce Greenwood. Steve Railsback's in it from Life Force, a turkey shoot. He's not quite as crazy, but he just still looks crazy. Catherine Isabel plays James Marsden's sister. She's super young.
I've got
so that makes sense then, because she would have been cast because it was shot in Canada.
Yeah.
Hence, because this is probably, this would be pre-Ginger Snaps.
Yeah. Well, I was watching, that's one of the few films I actually did watch from 1992, since the last podcast, was Night Moves with Christopher Lambert.
I fucking love that movie.
It's absolutely...
Is it hold up?
No, it's terrible.
Dude, I remember the scene in the early 90s. I thought it was amazing. Came around the same time as Raising Kane.
That's right.
Which I thought was brilliant at the time. Yeah. So now I know that's going to suck. That's
But Catherine Isabel plays Christopher Lambert's daughter, and she's about eight.
She's been around for a while.
She's been around forever.
Terry Mulligan's not on your list there.
Who's Terry Mulligan?
He plays one of the fathers, and he's in Canada. He's like the Canadian Molly Meldrum.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize he was someone. Okay. Was he the father of James Marsden or another parent?
I can't remember which father he was, but if you look him up on IMDb, he's got a shitload of credits. Some recent ones, too.
Right. So, yeah, and I mentioned earlier that the studio forced so many recuts. They took the film out of the director's hands, and even, well, they did get him back and they shot an alternate ending, and the alternate ending is the ending that's in the movie, but the DVD has the original ending, which is a far superior ending. I kind of wish that they could just cobble together the proper director's cut, because even though there's 11 deleted scenes, there's a lot more footage unseen. It's coming out, I think, in April through Scream Factory in the US. Unfortunately, it'll just be theatrical. Carries over all the same special features. I don't know if they've done anything new with it. I want to see it in HD, so I'm excited.
Well, you know, might not have the extended, but just good to have attention on it.
Yeah, that's it.
It brings a little forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. It brings the light back to this film. I mean, it is deleted locally, which sucks. It's a classic. Oh. I fucking love it. Like, it's a film that when it came out, I enjoyed, and it felt like a guilty pleasure liking it then.
Yeah.
But it's really held up. Yeah, I think it's really held up, and I love it. And it's got a cheesy, like, the song that was in the movie. The music video was cut to this band called The Flies. Never heard of them outside of this one song, Got You Where I Want You. And the song is just that typical bit of slap bass, a little bit of that, like, almost 311 rapping toward the end. Like, you get through this kind of slap bass rock song, and then the end it's like, summer, summer, come like no other. And you're like, it has no place.
Ragged death.
Almost like, oh yeah, a bit Sugar Ray-ish. So, but yeah, Disturbing Behavior. Forgotten.
Find it.
Get a hold of it. I mean, you can go to Cashies and probably pick it up for a buck, and it'll be the best buck you've ever spent.
That is high praise.
It's good. Find
it at Cashies for a buck. High praise.
But it's just like, you get excited about films, but I don't think I've ever heard you this excited.
It's really weird.
And you got more excited as you were.
The weirdest thing was, because after watching The Strange Behavior, or Dead Kids as it's known here, I said to Danny, oh, now I really want you to see Behavior. She goes, we just watched it. I went, it was like about 2 years ago. Well, I lied, Danny. It was actually only a year ago, but I made you think it was 2 years. And then you watched it because I said, it only goes for 84 minutes. And you're like, okay. So we got to watch it again. But guess what, Danny? I've got that Blu-ray on order from Amazon. It's going to arrive next month. And we're going to have to watch it again in HD.
Good.
But yeah, she grew up with this movie, and she said she watched it countless times on video. So yeah, God bless her.
Good era of teen horror.
Well, that year you had, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, not a great film by any stretch, but you had The Faculty. What else did
you have? Teaching Miss Tingle.
Urban Legend was that year. Jamie Blank's Urban Legend.
You had that whole spate. You even things like Marky Mark's film Fear.
Yeah, Fear. With the weird roller coaster scene where he's fingering her.
Yeah.
That was uncomfortable. Jesus Christ. I watched it with my parents. I'm uncomfortable
listening to you talk about it.
Can I say it again?
Yeah, go for it.
He was fingering her on the roller coaster, Sean. Yeah,
we are not going to a theme park together.
Ever.
We're not going to a Marky Mark concert. Mark and the Funky Bunch.
You're very strictly in one carriage.
and we're on another ride.
And Glenn and I are in a different park.
I hope they snap that photo just as we're coming down. just as we're coming down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. All actually, right. And that reminds me, I think Fear had the song by Bush, Come Down, was the song, the single from the movie.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there you go. So, I don't know, it's all about coming.
And Bush.
Oh, it's brilliant.
And if you're in Australia, Bush X, which is X-rated.
Oh, hello.
Do you remember that?
Bush X? No. Yeah.
Maybe it was Canada.
I thought they'd shave it, and then it would be an X.
It was Canada, because the group Bush, there's another band called Bush, and they had to change it to Bush X.
Yeah, really? I wonder what that was all about. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, this is a long history. They've done this with bands. There's a punk band from Melbourne called H Block 101.
Yeah.
There was another band that came out called H Block, but it was too similar to H Block 101. They already had it, so they called themselves H Block X.
Yeah. Really?
And I'm like,
add an X.
Unusual, but yeah, the whole reason was that's why.
You just
add an X. So if you've ever got a great idea for a film title or a band, just add an X at the end of it, and you'll probably get a couple people through the door.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Mine. Okay, first person to guess it. Made in 1990. It was based on a short story by Jim Harrison, who was like a sort of...
Fire in the Sky.
No.
No, that was like 93.
Shut up, Jared.
93. It's a great film, though.
Yeah. I'm going to start with the stars backwards, because if I start at the top list, you'll probably get it.
It's like a game of Sing.
Is this phonetically backwards? Or
no. Bottom of the cast list. Up.
I love that.
Co-star Aidan Quinn.
Oh, ooh. Aidan Quinn in 1990.
Can we have a genre?
No.
Action thriller.
Okay. Of course, it's Sean.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Aidan Quinn.
Next on the list, Madeleine Stowe.
Yeah, Mute Witness, no.
No, it's not Blink.
No, not Blink, no.
No, that was later, that was 93. No. Oh, I fucking know this movie. It's not Jennifer A. I feel like I've watched it in the last year.
Top build?
Yeah.
Kevin Costner.
Oh, Revenge!
Revenge.
Oh, this movie's fucking amazing! I only watched this again last year.
No,
why the fuck are we not videotaping this?
Yeah, I've never seen Jarrett act like this.
I'm so excited.
Revenge.
I'm so excited.
Forgotten gems!
Revenge. Hell of a film.
What a movie.
Hell of a film.
It's been a long time.
So good. Directed by Tony Scott. Mm. This was the fourth film Tony Scott did, the first one being The Hunger, which he was just maligned for. Mm. Couldn't catch a cold in Hollywood. Then he did Top Gun. Then he did Beverly Hills Cop 2. Then he did Revenge. Now, what makes Revenge so special, right, is that at the time, he was lined up to direct the first version of Man on Fire.
Right.
Because Man on Fire, the Denzel Washington film, is actually a remake. The original one came out in 1987-88. Starred Scott Glenn. I've got it at home. I'll bring it in for you.
What's it called?
Man on Fire.
By the same title. Right.
Yep, right. Not nearly as good a film. Not even close to nearly, right? But it's well worth watching just as an exercise of how to tell the same story twice, right?
Yeah.
And just as being a film nerd, it's well worth watching, right? It's kind of like typical 80s action, excessive violence. It's head-smackingly violent, right?
Right.
Anyway, so Tony Scott was originally lined up to direct this. Eventually, he felt his directorial skills weren't quite where they had to be at the time, so he gave it up, right?
Wow.
Right. Ended up going off, Scott Glenn made it, blah, blah. Yeah. And instead, 2 years later, he gets the opportunity to direct Revenge. Now, Revenge stars Kevin Costner as a military fighter pilot called Cochran. Cochran decides to retire early from the flight school and drives down to Mexico to see his best friend Tibby, which is played by Aidan Quinn, who, as it turns out, is this ruthless Mexican gangster. His wife is Madeleine Stowe, pure trophy wife. Let me tell you, Madeleine Stowe has never been hotter before she pumped her face full of all that plastic. She is gorgeous in this film, right? And then this relationship occurs between Cochran and Madeleine Stowe, and they have an affair. Tibby finds out about it, and Tibby shoots. I'm not ruining anything. This is on the blurb of the film. Tibby shoots Cochran, leaves him for dead in the deserts of Mexico. He scars up Madeleine Stowe's face and sends her to Mexico to become a prostitute.
Yeah, God.
Kevin Costner isn't dead, and now he goes into Mexico to try and find the love of his life.
Yeah.
Right? It is insanely good, right?
Oh, yeah.
It is so beautiful. This is, to Tony Scott, what Revolver was to the Beatles. It's the film that marks the evolution in his in his practice, where he goes from being this overtly style over substance guy, I think that's fair to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
To being this filmmaker that has something to say and tell stories that has a weight and a gravity. And this film straddles the line between the two beautifully. It is gorgeously shot.
Beautifully.
It is stunning. So beautiful to look at, right? It just drips the sweat and this sexy, Mexican thing.
It's like a sweaty, sexy sort of thing.
Mexican thing.
Like a shimmering sort of oasis out in the Mexican desert.
And then when these moments of violence end up coming,
they hit you hard.
They are like sledgehammers to your face.
Completely off guard.
Yeah, completely off guard. Eventually, as we know, Tony Scott would go on to direct Man on Fire, but I would even say Revenge, dare I say it, controversially, Revenge might be the better film.
I think it's a better film.
Now, here's the kicker, right? Is when Revenge was released in 1990, its original running time was 2 hours and 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
No, it was long, and I've got the VHS of that version, and it's good, and it's sweaty, and it's sexy, and it's beautiful, right? But about 10 years ago, Tony Scott released a director's cut. Tony Scott, outside of Oliver Stone, is the only person I know to release a director's cut of anything that is shorter than the original
film.
Well,
Picnic Hangin' Rock.
There you go, Picnic Hangin' Rock, right? So he takes a 2 hour and 5 minute and then he drops it down to 1 hour and 3 quarter, restructures a little bit of the movie, and all of a sudden you have what was a good film, and now it's a great film.
Yeah.
It moves a million miles an hour. Just, you have to see it. If you're going to watch it in order.
And that's the only way to see it now, because that's the only version that's available on Blu-ray and the DVDs.
The DVDs
technically out of print now. Which is kind of cool. He managed to, this was...
And it's a hell of an audio commentary. If you're into your audio commentaries, it's a hell of an audio commentary, because he talks about his evolution as a director and how he approached the film, and, it is really...
It's been way too long since I've seen it, so much so that I don't know which cut I saw, so I'm really keen to watch it again.
Yeah. Probably but, theatrical,
I used to confuse it all the time with No Way Out.
The other Kevin Costner.
The other Kevin Costner film the next year.
Roger Donaldson.
That's right, but the poster art was very similar at the time.
Yeah.
Like, it was really similar. Yeah. So, back when even when I started working in video stores, those two just confused the shit out of me. I couldn't remember if it's the same film with a new title in Australia or whatever, but Revenge, I haven't seen in ages.
And even if you put any weight in Tarantino's opinion, which I'm increasingly less inclined to do, when he released True Romance, which he wrote, obviously Tony Scott directed, he said, I want the guy that directed Revenge to direct.
First of all, he wanted to direct it himself.
Of
course he did.
But if you haven't seen it, certainly check it out. If you can find both versions, it is an interesting exercise to watch the two of them to see just how different they are. But if you can't get your hands in both of them, just stick to the director's cut, because it is a hell of a film. Hell of a film.
Hell of a film. Love that movie. I only watched it again last year, and it just, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen Kevin Costner with that intensity in a film. Because he's, he's played a range of different roles, but the intensity in that film is just something else.
And there's bits and pieces of it. The relationship aspect, watching this relationship between Kevin Costner and Madeline Stowe sort of blossom and flower, where the circumstances, they're not bad circumstances, they're dangerous and deadly circumstances. Absolutely. To watch this relationship bloom, it's heartbreaking.
It is so
real. The only other time I've seen a love, like, usually, because guys like us, we watch movies so often that it's very hard to penetrate us emotionally, right? Sure. You watch things, and I find that I superimpose the emotion that I'm supposed to be. Oh, the music is swelling, therefore I should feel feel heartwarmed. Or it's raining, therefore it is romantic or whatever. But watching these little moments between Kevin Costner, and your heart swells. It races in your chest because something magical is happening. Mm. And it's the only time, other than Adrian Lyne's film, Unfaithful, where I believe that this love interest, it's happening. And it's happening before me. And it's not contrived, and it feels organic.
These adulterous sort of films, basically.
I like those too, but like
you just mentioned Unfaithful. That's an awkward movie to watch with a partner.
Not a date film.
Yeah. No.
Not a date film, no.
Actually, any of his films, really.
Lolita, 8.5 weeks.
Fatal Attraction. What's going on with this guy?
I know, right? Anyway. That's mine, for what it's worth. Great Revenge, pick. 1990. Great,
and honestly, it is a forgotten gem, because not enough people talk about it. And you know, when they talk about Kevin Costner's roles, that one rarely comes up. When you talk Tony Scott films, that one rarely comes up. Yeah. So it is a forgotten gem.
Yeah.
So I think that segment needs an outro. Needs an outro, Jarrett.
I know. I actually liked your outro.
I actually liked that. Like, what?
Needs an
outro. And they're just blank space.
Yeah.
So that's it, guys. That's another Fake Shemp podcast for
another 3 weeks.
This was the 25th
episode.
Happy 25, guys.
Thanks.
I've only been here for 10 of them.
I love that you're keeping count.
I'm proud of my appearances on the Fake Shemp podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, any news to tie it off?
Well, let's just mention we've got the Fitzroy Film Fair popping up again on 3rd. April 9th.
Saturday, April 9th, sir.
Yeah, we love these film fairs. We've been to all of them so far.
Yeah.
It's essentially a film market for anyone who hasn't been. It's at a bar called Luau. Really quirky, tropical kind of bar.
Yeah,
but there's
tiki bar.
Tiki rockabilly bar.
Yeah. There's just, it's like a market. There's stalls with people selling all kinds of stuff, from DVDs to, there's even like birthday cards, movie themes, posters, and
absolutely
all kinds of knickknacks. So we'll be there.
Yes.
Mostly selling Blu-ray, so if you want to come along and grab some bargains, definitely do.
Mm.
We'll be the fakeshemp.net table.
We need to get shit out of our house.
That's right.
So, Sean, will you be coming along to assist with getting it out of our place? And
it depends if I have my own place by that time.
But... Actually, if Sean leaves tonight through the garage, I might not have anything to bring.
Not again.
Now, I might mention, after the film fair that Saturday at from 5 p.m. is the launch for Smoke 'Em If You've Got 'Em, the classic 1988 Aussie... What would you call it?
It's almost an exploitation film, I suppose.
Yeah, you know. It's
A grungy gonzo kind of film. Yeah. I don't know.
Post Holocaust comedy.
It's a fucking ripper of a movie.
Yeah. Post Holocaust, that doesn't sound right.
Let's just call it a cult film.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. They're doing the launch, they're screening the film and screening Ray Bosley's first feature, his graduate project, Tarzan South Yarra Adventure, back to back on
16mm. Oh, which we've seen and is great.
It's great. Yeah. And after that, the band that actually did the music for Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em, Blue Ruin, will be doing a live set, and they're this huge Melbourne band from the 80s that I actually did a featurette for. Well, I did a few featurettes for the Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em DVD, but one of them is about the band Blue Ruin, who at the time were Scrap Museum when they did the music for Tarzan, did Scrap Museum-esque music as well as Blue Ruin music for Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em, and they're performing that, and I'm really excited because, you know, these guys are fantastic, and the music from the films are terrific. To see them live will be something else.
Really excited about that. If you're a film fan, particularly a cult/genre horror kind of film fan, get along to the Fitzroy Film Fair. April 9th starts at midday.
And it's cheap too. I think it's like maybe $5.
$5
to get
entry,
in.
something like that.
And I think you pay $10 and you can stay all night.
It's full of film geeks like us.
And filmmakers. There's filmmakers there. Like, well, obviously, you know, Stu has a major part in organising this.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, Mark Hartley was there at the last one.
Yeah.
So you're rubbing shoulders with, you know, Melbourne's filmmaking community, which is cool.
And yeah, like you said, the makers of Smoke 'Em If You've Got 'Em are going to be there.
Yeah,
who,
Ray Bosley.
Who are the guys who also made Kenny and, you know...
Yeah, Clayton Jacobson will be there. And you'll be able to pick up the DVD on the day and get it signed by the guys as well.
Brilliant. So
cool.
Tell us a little bit about the DVD before we wrap.
Right, okay. So, obviously, the film only runs at 48 minutes, but the DVD itself has over 3.5 hours of special features.
Wow.
There's commentaries, featurettes, Q&As. There's some of Ray's early short film work. Ray directed a bunch of music videos for Blue Ruin, one of which is on this DVD. It's the first in a new line from Monster Pictures called Monster Masters.
Yep.
And if this is anything to go by, this Monster Masters label is going to be phenomenal. It is effectively the lowbrow criterion of not only just local cinema, I believe the possibility of them doing films from overseas as well.
Cool.
But yeah, it's really exciting to you know, anyone to give a local film such a, you know, amazing special edition. Yeah, that's phenomenal.
It is an amazing special edition, isn't it?
I'm pretty stoked.
This is to be rivaled with, you know, like Trauma's special releases.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is incredible. Yeah.
And there's Easter eggs galore on it, I've been told.
Fantastic.
And even the artwork, everything about this is like, man, this is an awesome release.
Look, if you've never seen the film, which we probably haven't, and you're a fan of FakeChamp.net, it is the type of film you'll love. Because
absolutely.
It's the type of film we love. It's genre at its finest.
You got Nick Needles in it, you know, from
Dogs in Space.
There's so many things. The more I've watched this film, the more I've fallen in love with it more and more. It's a great
It's such a fucking great opening scene too.
It's funny.
The kitchen scene is great.
Oh, so good. And
cool.
I might mention Dick Dale, Trashorama's Dick Dale. This is his all-time favourite film.
It sure is.
Really?
And he might be coming. Wants to come down for the screening. If he turns up for it,
Game on.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, well, he is the person that pretty much brought this film to the light and under Monster's attention.
Absolutely.
Monster screened it with him at the festival.
Yes,
Monster
and you can check out that Q&A. He turns up on the DVD as well.
Boom!
Yeah.
All over it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's another episode.
That's it, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, guys, for listening.
And just think, by the time that we do the next podcast, Disturbing Behavior will be available on Blu-ray in the United States. It will be a not-so-forgotten gem. That brings a lot of warmth to my heart. And I hope by the time we do the next podcast that this guy's seen it. I'll be bringing a copy of it along with me next time in case you haven't.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. We've been FakeChamp.net, and this is the end of the show. But we're going to be taken out with a little sing-along from Jarrett, The not quite forgotten gem.
Forgotten gems.
The not quite forgotten gems.
Not quite forgotten gems.
Good. Thanks for listening, guys.